eventually 2018, I ended up in the ICU. And so that was a really important day because I should have walked in the ring after 10 years of chasing that championship belt and, you know, fought for that, winning the goal I've been looking for my whole life, you know, and instead I didn't get to compete. I went to the ICU and almost lost my life.
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to today's show. So I think when most people think about eating disorders, they usually don't picture a male athlete. They definitely don't picture an Olympian, a professional boxer, a husband, a father, someone who looks disciplined, tough, and successful on the outside. And that's exactly part of the problem. So in this episode, I'm talking with Danny O'Connor. He's been here before, and if you don't know anything about him, he's a former U.S. Olympian, elite professional boxer, and author of Weight Class, about the hidden reality of eating disorders in men, and more specifically, the dangerous intersection between disordered eating and weight class sports. Because what happens when the very behaviors that are praised in your sport, what happens when they're the same ones quietly destroying your relationship with food, your body, and eventually your health? Danny shares how years of extreme weight cutting became normalized, how those behaviors escalated into a full eating disorder, and how long it took to even recognize that what was happening was not just, you know, part of his sport. We talk about secrecy, shame, and the confusion that happens when discipline starts getting mistaken for wellness, and how easy it is for a serious disorder to hide behind performance, achievement, and a very convincing, hey, I'm quote unquote fine. This conversation is very powerful for so many reasons. Yes, it shines a light on male eating disorders, which are still wildly under-recognized and under-discussed, but also because it gets at something deeper. The way eating disorders can disguise themselves as dedication, control, grit, or success. And if you've ever convinced yourself that what you're doing isn't quote-unquote that bad because it quote-unquote works, because people praise it, because it helps you perform, this episode may hit closer to home than you expect. Danny's really candid, thoughtful, and incredibly honest in our conversation. So whether you're an athlete, a clinician, someone struggling yourself, or someone who loves a person who is, this is an episode that matters. So I'm going to go get Danny. And like I said, this is a really powerful conversation. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our conversation. All right. Well, Danny, welcome back to the show. I'm excited. I know it's been a while since you've been on, but now you have a book. And just what have you been up to aside from writing the book?
Oh, man. Well, I do have four children and a wife of 15 years. So, you know, they fill a lot of my time as much as I can. So my hands are always filled. It's kind of crazy, but I wouldn't change it. I have a lot of fulfillment and purpose in my life. And I think the book really was able to show me that in a mirror. Like, doing the book was one of the most purposeful things I've ever done. And I tried to make it perfect, like on every turn, which, you know, obviously is not possible, but I'm just trying to emphasize I worked really hard on it. And it wasn't just writing a book. Like, I kind of had to learn the whole book business and be part of the creative content team and, you know, build the book and the pictures and what it would look like. And it was a growing experience of my own doing the book too, because I got to look at my life in reverse it was real purposeful. It was like my ability to give some people that are struggling now, or some people that may never need to struggle if they have the ability to change habits early. And so I wanted to give that message, especially to males, young males, like, you know, there's really two issues here. One is the tactics I use to manipulate my body to make weight and for a weight class sport throughout my youth all the way into my professional career for 15 years, but then also subsequently an eating disorder, which is a separate thing. Also, you know, very, very dangerous for your health and for your life. And so I just wanted to give that because there weren't a lot of books out there when I look like when I kind of like was definitely into recovery, but also when I was like, you know, down the road of what is an eating disorder and what other males have it and how can I find information on what's going on with me? I didn't feel like there was a ton of topics out there, especially males. I mean, so I thought it was very, very purposeful to be able to write this book and give it to the world. And so it took a long time, a lot of work, and I'm happy that I was able to do it. And it just so happens that it like coincided with Eating Disorders Awareness Month, which I didn't really plan. It kind of just like the timeline worked out like that. And so I thought it was really cool.
No, that's great. And, you know, especially because I think there's a lot of confusion with athletes in terms of the things they do, especially like in the sport you're talking about, you know, doing things because they have to meet weight. And so looking at that as like some normal part of it instead of it being some disorder. I want to talk about that a little bit, but also there aren't a lot of men who come out and talk about the things that are eating disordered. And so I really appreciate that you're speaking out and bringing awareness to that. Because I think a lot of people, maybe when they hear you talk about it or read your book, they might go, oh my gosh, maybe I do have an eating disorder and I had no idea, or the things I'm doing are harmful to my body, or is, you know, what I'm told is normal to do for my sport or activity, can that do damage or harm to my body? And because maybe they're not thinking that it could. And so I'm wondering, even for you, when you were, you know, trying to cut weight, did you at all ever think, oh, this might have like some damage to my body? Or did you just think, this is what everyone does, this is what I'm supposed to do?
No, I think that was the biggest problem. That's why I talk about awareness. Like, I didn't even know what an eating disorder was. I, you know, obviously I knew the things I was doing acutely put my life at risk because I was doing them in the moment, but I didn't think anytime ever stepping on a scale all the way back till I was, you know, like 14 years old, the first time I went into a weight class, I never once said like, what am I doing now? How can that affect me in 10 years? Right. I never asked myself that. I just manipulated my body in ways that were unhealthy in the moment. And there was a lot of abnormal eating and it didn't happen overnight. Like, I didn't just wake up with an eating disorder. It was something that progressed and developed and like, you know, knowingly, unknowingly, purposefully, I kind of reinforced habits with those weight tactics and a lot of things added to that eating disorder, but it was something that I didn't know about. I didn't know that an eating disorder was even a thing until it got to a stage when it was too late. And like you talked about before, like I did all these things, whether they're viewed as unhealthy or whatnot, to make weight, but I did them with pretty crazy discipline, whether it was, you know, whatever I needed to do. And so when that changed and I didn't have that discipline anymore to be able to like do these things, and then I was obviously out of control within the eating disorder itself, I realized like, wow, you know, it was beyond willpower. And once I kind of got to that point, I realized like, you know, this is really, really serious right now. And so it was kind of a long path of both the things I did to myself within the sport, within the weight class, and it was lack of awareness. Like if I had more information or if I had more understanding, if I just had more education, then I could have made different decisions for my own body in that sport, because the sport saved my life. I love the sport and I still love it to this day. And from all the hardships and the negative that I have within the weight and the weight classics, the weight tactics, I'm not going to put that on the sport or any combat sport, because that sport's a sport that can uplift kids and save lives. But I think there has to be more awareness around the scale. Like, you can absolutely compete in a combat sport as a healthy athlete. You don't cut weight. You fuel your body. You train yourself. You have some discipline. You fit like that image of what a professional athlete would be. And you take the weight out of it. There's no jeopardizing your life to make a weight class that maybe you shouldn't fit in. Like, I think that's the best way to be optimal and to fuel your performance. But I didn't do that. I did all the things you shouldn't do and just normalize putting my life at risk, over just, you know, decades really, because my professional career by itself was almost 15 years. So, you know, I normalized that stuff. And I just thought, you know, when my career is done, I would go back to what you think normal would be. You know, I wouldn't go too far or too less, and I wouldn't manipulate. I would just go back to what normal is, because now I don't have a weight class anymore. And I never once asked myself, or I never once even thought that maybe that wasn't even an option on the table to go back. And because at one point I didn't have control over the eating disorder, even though my mind and body was telling me to do stuff different, there was a disconnect with what my body was really doing in my actions. Right. And so, I didn't even know that would end up being the case. I thought it would just, you know, so I think like having more awareness of the scale of what these habits could lead to, of predispositions to an eating disorder that make you already susceptible on top of the things that I was doing to myself. Like, so I think if it was just more of a topic of conversation, globally, you know, maybe I would have made different decisions earlier on and maybe went a different path. And I think that's why it's really important that I kind of tell people what I went through, because I mean, I'm no different than anyone else. I'm just a kid from middle-class Boston, and I just did what I thought I had to do to be great at sports and then, you know, fulfill all these athletic dreams and goals that I had. And the eating disorder was something that I had to learn about. I mean, we're talking about 20 years, right? So, and recovery by itself was a whole lot of years too, with an S. So, you know, I had to understand what it was, because the weight class was gone, right? The weight class is gone, but the eating disorder wasn't. Like, it was still something that was trying to kill me on a daily basis that I had to like figure out with a lot of professional help. And a lot of that time we talked about was in solitude, even though I had a professional team keeping me alive, that I was sharing what was going on. You know, outside of my wife, nobody in the world knew what was going on with me or how deep it went. And even if you look back now after you read it, you say, oh, well, yeah, there were signs. Like, yeah, there were signs, because a lot of my behaviors were abnormal when it came to eating or to the eating disorder, plus the weight class, right? A lot of the time I could hide it in how disciplined I was as an athlete or whatever regiment I was on. And sometimes that was true. Sometimes I was on a regiment that was tied into like my optimal health. Like, if I had to train at this time and then I was going to eat at this time, that's the time I was going to eat because it matched. But other times it wasn't. Other times it was just hiding the disorder, so I didn't have to explain more to you. So a lot of the journey, you know, years of it was, you know, just me and my wife and the professional team. And so, you know, you say 10, or they say, you know, the estimated stats are 10 million men, you know, are affected by eating disorders. Well, I've only talked to 4 other men in my whole like kind of span of trying to figure this thing out. And, you know, one was a child and none of them were within, you know, an arm reach where I could like sit down and have a cup of coffee with and say what, and that's what I needed. Right. Because when I came out of delusion and I realized I'm trying to do something and my body is doing something opposite, like, it was a mind bend, because I didn't know what was going on with my body. I had no idea. Like, as an athlete, I had this extreme discipline my whole life, and then all of a sudden I wake up and it's gone. That blew my mind. So it was just something that I really had to understand, like, what, and I look at everything like athletics, like, you know, you have a torn ACL. Okay. You have an injury. It needs to heal. You need to rehab it. You need to get back into the sport. And I look everything with my body that way, emotional, physical, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, if something needs to be adjusted, we optimize and then we put it back in, because I look as an athlete, as like a whole athlete, like everything contributes, like not just the physical, it's the mental, the emotional, everything. So I looked at the eating disorder kind of in that lens too. Like, there's something drastically wrong here how do I figure this out so I can quit it, basically, is what I was thinking. And I remember 2013, like, I will never forget it. It was the epiphany, and I was in Texas when I had it, of like, oh, damn, I got an eating disorder, followed by the next question of like, all right, well, what is an eating disorder? And then I thought it was an overnight thing. Like, anything that I view as negative in my life or something that's like impeding in the path or the journey, I try to exit out. And so I thought the same thing with eating disorder. Okay, I'm going to quit this thing overnight. And I was drastically wrong about that. Drastically. I will be humbled by that. I thought it was going to be something where I would step away from boxing for, you know, I don't know, a week, figure this thing out and get right back into my sport and can continue to chase the dream. Because you got to understand also in the sport of boxing, that that world championship title, that is the Super Bowl, the World Series, that is the epitome. And to be focused on that one task for 10 years. So 2008 is when I turned pro. 2018 is when I got the shot at fighting for that championship belt. So, you know, to be focused on that one goal for so long and working towards it and almost being there and being knocked down a couple times was another aspect of my life that, like, you know, I was really focused on that too. And so I always had this internal conflict, right? I'm in this weight class and this weight class sport. It's my job to compete. But at the same time, this, the more the eating disorder progressed, the more those became in direct conflict of each other. And so there was a lot of conflict throughout really the whole journey.
So like if you, even just going back a ways to when you first got into it and you were trying to cut weight to meet a certain class, was that what everyone around you was doing? Did you just think that was normal? Like, how did you even learn these behaviors to begin with? Was that something you came up with? Was that something coaches told you? Were like peers doing that? Like, how did this even start for you? Just curious.
Well, no, like, and that's what I was talking about in the book. Like, I did a lot of things to my own body that I kept in secret, especially when I was young, because I viewed anything that had to do with the scale or not making weight like a direct liability to my sport. Like, I wasn't going to be able to compete right when I was young, which was, you know, obviously chase my dreams. I wanted to be an NCAA champion in Iowa. So like, I viewed anything I was doing with the scale as like a way that was going to, you know, I wouldn't be able to wrestle. And the same thing with my professional boxing career. The more that the eating disorder progressed and the more of a struggle it became to make the weight with the tactics, like, I view that as like, now I'm not going to be able to compete and make a living. Like, that was my livelihood. So when I look all the way back to that, like, no, it was because I took it upon myself to do things behind closed doors that I didn't know any better. For instance, like pharmaceutical laxatives, I can remember going into a Walgreens and stealing them, even so that I didn't have to bring them to the counter person and buy them, because then he would know that I would have them. And a lot of the time I used that laboratory in that Walgreens to go to the bathroom from them. So it you know, and I had a conversation with my first wrestling coach ever during the process of the book. And he had no idea, just like no one else in the world will ever have any idea of how deep this thing went unless you read the book, because I told you. So it was a lot of the things I did behind closed doors. And once you start doing it, like, you know, I got into all these unhealthy tactics. I knew, like, and I just based it off my body, right? If you don't eat, you don't gain. If you lose some sort of fluid, you lose. And so like, over years of just normalizing the unhealthy tactics I was using, they just added up, I think. And so eventually 2018, I ended up in the ICU. And so that was a really important day, because I should have walked in the ring after 10 years of chasing that championship belt and, you know, fought for that, winning the goal I've been looking for my whole life, you know. And instead, I didn't get to compete. I went to the ICU and almost lost my life. So like, you know, and that, you know, ended up in the ICU, put stuff in perspective really fast sometimes too. So, you know, yeah.
So at what point would you say you actually called it an eating disorder? Like, said I
2013.
Okay.
So, yeah, and this is the way I look at it. I look at it based off my control, right? That's how I look at it. I did a lot of things to manipulate my body to make a weight class, but then I could stop and then I didn't do them anymore. And I would wait until I had to do them again. And so, you know, I did that for many, many years. And I look at it like, when I look back, I look at like the times, because I went the other way too. If I went low, now I'm going to go purposely high. So I manipulated in so many different ways. They were abnormal, disordered eating. But then in 2013, when I tried to do something different and my body wouldn't let me, that's where I view it as like, okay, now something's wrong, because, you know, I probably woke up, you know, 5 years in a row and every day I wasn't going to binge eat. And then by the end of the time, I was in another episode, and what I promised myself I wouldn't do again, and what all parts of my being was trying not to do, but I still couldn't control it. That's when I knew, like, this is beyond me, because I've always had the ability as an athlete to kind of, and I won't say control, because I know there's a lot of things you can't control in life, but if I tell myself to stand up and walk across the room, my body's going to stand up and walk across the room. So when I had these episodes that at one time were uncontrolled, that I had no amount of willpower in the world could have had me change the outcome of it. And I just knew, like, this thing's beyond like something right here, because now I can't do different. Even when fighting at the Boston Garden was on the line, or my health was on the line, because I knew, like, I was already pre-diabetic from these other binges. So like, that's what people don't realize about eating disorders. And that's why I try to like up the severity and up the awareness, is like, when you go against your normal body functions, like don't eat when your body's telling you to eat and eat too much when your body's telling you to stop, when you go against these normal functions of your body that are there to survive, they are going to affect health systems in your body. And so like, and that's what I was doing. Like one time I turned myself completely orange, all my palms, my elbows, and it was visible. I would go out and people would say something to me. And, you know, another time I was basically pre-diabetic numerous times, because a lot of the times during training camp, or like leading up to a fight, they'd have to test you, your blood work. And so I would have a very intense binge the night before sometimes when they, you know, or the 3 weeks before every day. So like the eating disorders affect your body systems drastically. And over time and time, like those systems wear out. And so like, when I knew that I couldn't control something, even though my health was at risk, like, because my number one goal in this life is to be a parent and a husband. And so like anything that jeopardized that, I'm instantly taking like account of like, all right, well, is this worth it? So when I couldn't still make changes, even though my health was at risk, that's when I was like, damn, this is, you know, pretty powerful right now. And like, so 2013, and then, you know, obviously because it wasn't an overnight thing, you know, now it's years and years of trying different things to get myself healthy and get myself back into a normal functioning relationship with food and life, basically.
Yes, so it's really interesting you said that, like, when you don't eat when your body says it's hungry, or you eat when, you know, you're not hungry. Like, so many people I work with don't even have those signals. They've lost touch with those signals. Was there ever a time where you just had no idea? Am I hungry? Am I not hungry? Like, just lost complete body awareness?
Yeah, for years. Even today, I still don't know if I'm really hungry or not hungry, because I went against those cues so extremely for so many years that I lost them, basically. And the doctor of psychology that I, you know, a lot of professionals tell me they're going to come back, and I'm like, well, you know, it's been a long time and they're still not back. So, and that's what I mean. Like, your body has primitive functions to survive. And when you go against those things, like, you know, your body knows intuitively, like, you got to just listen to your body most of the time. And that's opposite of what I did for, you know, a whole career. So, like I was trying to say with the health things, like it can have lasting effects for sure.
And I'm imagining too, like, being a professional, like, you were probably expending a lot of energy just moving and working out and training and all of that. Do you feel like you know, you were given, I mean, I don't know, were you working with anybody to help you figure out like your nutritional needs or how much you needed for like being at that level of training?
I mean, well, so here's the thing. If you don't listen to the nutritional plan, it's not going to do anybody. And so, you know, I've worked with like, I won't say millions, so that's a lot, but I've worked with over 20 nutritionists, dietitians, like, you know, I've with some of the best that work with other people in combat sports. So like it got, the eating disorder got to a point where it didn't matter what I wanted to do. It's only what it was going to do. So like those nutritional, you know, nutritionists, dietitians, they didn't have any say in other than this is what you should eat. This is your body composition. This is what, right? And so those people were never the professionals. I was like, hey, I have an eating disorder like this. You know, and so my professional team, you know, later on are the people that knew what I was doing when it was coming to like, because I had eaten a certain way for so long. Like I had to, not only did I have an eating disorder that I had to immediately kind of spearhead and understand, learn and get over, I also had to understand what this relationship with food is. Because if you look at like your traditional, you know, I get a lot of comparisons to addiction, right? Well, in addiction, you can have complete abstinence. Like I'm not going to have this anymore. Food's not like that. That's where the difference lies, is like, I can never not eat again. I can't quit totally an eating disorder technically, because I still have to eat. I still have to have a relationship with food for the rest of my life. And so that, you know, changes the fact that like, there is no abstinence. So you have to put back in control this thing that's extremely out of control while you still nourish your body to survive. And so like, that was a mind bend for me too, because I had to like learn all that stuff. And eating disorders are so extremely complex and severe. They can be severe and super dangerous to your life. And so it took a, you know, it's a whole journey of understanding that and trying to figure that out.
Like someone would have told you, I don't know, 5 years before you, you know, 2018, okay, this could kill you. What you're doing could absolutely kill you. Would you believe them, or would you have stopped doing what you were doing at the time?
You know, I think sometimes I gotta touch the stove to make sure it's hot. And so like, I'm not gonna act like I knew the tactics that I was using to manipulate myself to make weight were healthy. I knew that they were unhealthy, but I thought that they were just, you know, acute. Like I said, I normalized them. This is what I was doing. So I thought that they would be a very acute thing. Like, you know, in the moment, I didn't realize that they could lead to other consequential things like an eating disorder that were now going to affect my whole life, not just a sport, not just my job, not just a weight class. And so, you know, like I said, sometimes you got to touch the iron, you know, to know it's hot. And so that's kind of what I did when I ended up in the ICU. That was definitely the mindset shift that I needed for sure.
I think that's so true. Like there's a moment for most people where there's just, okay, now this is something I have to address. And before that, it's kind of either denial, or maybe they don't even know that what they're doing is disordered or could have any effects on them. So if anyone's listening who maybe has no idea that the things they're doing is maybe an eating disorder, they might think, to your point, maybe that some of the things aren't the best for my body, or I don't want to keep doing them long term. Like what would you say to them? Maybe some red flags that they might be aware of, that, hey, maybe this is something beyond just, you know, unhealthy or temporary or things you're doing for your sport or activity.
I would just say you gotta be super aware. Like you gotta, you know, personally aware. Like I think that that's where I've been blessed, in the fact that I'm very aware in my own skin, in my own body, in my own mind. I'm like, yeah, sure, everyone has maybe a hint of delusion and it's like an onion. We peel that back. But for the most part, as an athlete, I'm wicked aware. I'm always like assessing, especially in the sport of boxing, like if you're hurt, it's like a computer, right? So I think you have to be really aware of your habits and what you're doing, see them for what they are. And then on top of that, I think you really have to educate yourself in your profession of like what you're doing, how it's affecting you, and also what it can lead to. Like, and you know, that's the biggest thing about this whole journey is I had to like understand all this stuff and all these different things. And if I had known 50% of it or 30% of it before I had started, I would have done things a lot differently. You know what I mean? Because I didn't realize the things I was doing, what they could lead to. And that's why, because eating disorders are real complex, right? The physical, mental, emotional, it, you know, a lot of different systems can be affected in different ways. And so, just, you know, a brutally honest awareness and then kind of education, you know, what you're doing, what it can lead to. And then I think trusted supports. I mean, even though my wife didn't have an eating disorder, she still had my back, you know, so even in times on a male eating disorder, when I felt super isolated and alone, like I was the only one, I still knew my wife had my back, even though she didn't have an eating disorder and she couldn't tell what was going on the inside, but she could see the outside because we've been married for 15 years, but I knew that she had my back. So I wasn't always going to, I couldn't find that guy that had the eating disorder that I could sit down and say, hey, let me connect with you. What's going on with my body? I didn't have that. So I had to be okay with other supports that may have not understood me the most, but they still have my back no matter what. And so I think that's another key chain in this thing too, is have those good supports that you can turn to and that they can give you an honest reflection of yourself, because you know, sometimes you can't see stuff and they can see it. So like having an open conversation with, you know, trusted supports where they can like, you know, tell you something that they think, you know what I mean? And you can have an open dialogue and listen to them and not be defensive about it, you know? So I think those three things would have been, could be pretty key on, especially because if we're talking about early intervention right now, like that's where you want to catch it. You don't want to wake up like I did and realized, oh damn, I'm already way deep down in this thing, you know, I've already lost control. Like this thing has already affected my life. Like you don't want to wake up and then that's where you are. Early intervention is pretty key. Like look at what other people are doing and what they shouldn't be doing and how that affects them. And, you know, address yourself accordingly, maybe make some different changes or some new habits. Right. And so early intervention, I think, is pretty key in breaking up that chain. Like don't let it develop for so long that these habits are now like ingrained in you, which a lot of them for me were.
I think that's the hardest part though, is people think it's so normal. They think, oh, this is just what everyone does, or it's encouraged even, right? So especially if you're really successful in your sport or your activity, it might be like, well, this is what I need to do to be successful. So how do you know it's not healthy or you're doing something that might hurt you? And so like, how do people even know, like, okay, this, you know, this, I'm getting the pats on the backs, I'm performing well, I'm getting, you know, championship, you know, titles, or I'm doing all these things, why would I stop? Like, it'd probably be a little scary to think like, well, why would I stop doing what I'm doing if it's resulting in success?
I mean, you got to read the book. There's no question you would know my story is bad. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I was taking off double digit pounds overnight. And sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of pounds during a training camp. So like, you know, 2011, I starved so aggressively, I made myself anemic, which is an iron deficiency, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's how I competed when I got in the ring. Like I didn't have any delusion that what I was doing was bad. I just thought mm-hmm. I could change it later. And so my stuff mm-hmm. was very extreme. Like there's no question that it was bad for you. If your stuff is a little bit more unnoticed, then understand that that's why these things are so complex and serious, because there's a lot of different ways that eating disorders can develop. And maybe my way is different than your way, but they also hide in plain sight. So if you have little habits now, they could be really big habits later. And I think that that's just why, you know, basically like a house cleaning with somebody that you support and that's trusted that can give you good feedback. You know what I mean? And that's what I do with my wife all the time. I mean, obviously I have professionals, a team of professionals I talk to, and we can always talk about the eating disorder, but like, I'm always bouncing stuff off my wife to make sure that I'm looking at it the same. And you know what I mean? So I think that that's really important.
Yeah. And that's why I was asking too, about if you were working with nutritionists, like, I think a lot of times people lie, right? They may be working with a professional and like they're, you know, being told this or checking in, and the eating disorder wants you to lie because it's so shameful, or, you know, it wants to take such control. I'm wondering if you were being told to do this and the eating disorder is like, yeah, right. And like lying or just not, just completely dismissing what you were told to do.
Oh, everything, of course. And so that's what I mean. Like, I didn't tell anyone about the eating disorder. Nobody. So like not coaches, not business affiliates, not nutritionists, nobody related to the sport whatsoever. And, you know, I didn't start telling people about the eating disorder until, you know, I started understanding it and talking to professionals and trying to figure out what's the path forward. And even when I was doing that, I still wasn't telling the rest of the world. A lot of the time, every time I left the sport of boxing twice, once I left for a long time and once I left for like a year or so. And boxing's a weird sport. Like, you know, it's expected that you go in and out. There's no season. So like, I don't need to explain myself, but no, I never told anyone. I left the sport. I did whatever professional cares I needed to, and then went back to the weight class. And so, you know, there was no one that I was going to let in, because then you would have had to tell them about the eating disorder, really. And so no one. And that's why I say, when a lot of people now, like, you know, there were definitely signs of the way I was eating, how I was eating at different times. Like, there were definitely signs that people probably look back and they would have been like, you know, that's strange, but they would have never been able to know the depth because I didn't tell them, or I had to hide it, or, you know, for whatever reason. Until now, I just decided I'll tell everyone in the world. I'll just write a book. And I don't love talking about this stuff. I do, like, there's two things, right? Like, there's some kid somewhere in the world stepping on a weight class right now. Your life is kind of at risk and you don't even know it. So, you know, let me help you. Don't do any of this stuff. Just be an athlete, be optimal, feel yourself. Doesn't matter what numbers on the scale, go compete with your skills and, you know, be the next Olympian and win a gold medal. Like, that's it. And so don't do anything I do, so that you can maybe come down this path of, you know, manipulating your body for a weight class or an eating disorder. Don't come this way. You don't want to come this way. And then also, you know, for all those guys in the eating disorder world, like, I think it's important to talk about this conversation and normalize getting help and how serious this thing is. So, that's basically what I'm doing.
That's,
you know,
great.
And I thought writing a book, like, I would just write it and people could read it and then I wouldn't have to talk about it. But I realized now you got to talk about it more. So it's like, you know, I might as well just, it's whatever, but, you know, I think it's just a conversation that has to, just like be talked about.
No, it's true. And, you know, it is to get the awareness out there and to get people talking. And, you know, the eating disorder I find always is like, has this yes, but message, right? So people listening might be like, yeah, I hear you, Danny, but to be realistic, in order to compete, I have to cut weight. You know, like, how do you do that if somebody says that to you? It says, yeah, I hear you, but I can't.
I think that's a whole nother topic. That's a whole industry or a sport that needs to like change the culture a little bit to realize that like nobody really needs to cut weight. Like, I don't care how big you are. Like, I'd put my skills up against anybody because I'm a trained athlete. I'm disciplined. And so the more athletes can like kind of come together and say like, I don't want to cut weight. I'm just going to be what I weigh when I'm optimal, right? When I'm training, when I'm disciplined. And, you know, if there is an in between, it's a healthy way. The big thing that people like, also the takeaway you have to realize is, I went down on one side, and then like you think of like, and this is the way it should be, right? If you're a pro athlete, a lot of the times you are for 24 hours. You're like a Floyd Mayweather. You're always in shape. You're always eating good because that's the lifestyle. And I didn't do that, right? So I'd go down, but then I'd go the opposite and go way up. So my weight fluctuations weren't just one way. They were one way and then the complete opposite way. And so it was double. And so that is not a healthy way to be. That creates a ton of bad habits and a ton of problems. So like, it wasn't like I was always optimal and then I'd make weight and it wasn't my lifestyle. I went up and down, and that had a lot of effect on me. So, you know, I think that's just like a cultural thing in combat sports. I got, and it's changed, and I see it change now. Like, a lot of people want to just be optimal. They don't care about the weight, and they're going to go compete. And the more people do that, then it will just be a display of skills. Cause the reality is, I never in my life got to step in the ring on fight night and compete at 100%. Not once ever. I mean, think about 2013. I was anemic when I got in the ring, and because it drastically affected my health during that fight, I then broke my nose and had to go get a nasal reconstructive surgery. So, like, because of the weight tactics, I have never been optimal to step in the ring the next night to fight. You just, your body can't bounce back like that to be. It's just impossible. So I just think the more people start talking about it, and hopefully my story can help that a little bit. It's like, you know, nobody should die making weight. Nobody. Death should never be the result of somebody making weight. Never. Like, it's just, it shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think men are so hesitant to talk about it or admit that they're struggling?
I'm not really sure. I mean, for me, I was embarrassed. Well, number one, I couldn't find a lot of guys, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, you know, what is happening to me? Like, I'm not finding any other guys. So right away, that kind of made me a little bit like, oh, damn, what's happening right now? And then on top of that, I was pretty embarrassed because, like I said before, with my discipline, athletics and sport, you know, my discipline was really good. And then all of a sudden it wasn't. So, like, I was kind of embarrassed that I couldn't control this thing, that it was like getting beyond me. And, the more down that road it went, like, my health's at risk now, like, my job's at risk, the more I was like embarrassed, like, damn, how come I can't just, I mean, it's food. How come I can't just figure this thing out and change it? And that's what I used to think. And then I realized, like, no, it's not just food in and out. There's a lot more things behind this thing that I had to learn over the years. And so I'm not really sure. And I think that that's a lot of the reason too, is why I'm pretty open and honest about my story. I don't know why, like, if there are 10 million men struggling, I hope that since I'm the persona of what a tough guy would be, I mean, I've fought my whole career. I hope it can give you a little bit of a platform or a nudge. If you need help, you need help. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, eating disorder, drugs, whatever it is, like, mental health is a very serious thing and whatever path you take, right? And so I think the whole conversation should be normalized, getting help. Like, if you need help, just like an athlete, whether it's your emotional state, your mental state, your physical state, like, you got to address it. And hopefully you can, you know, and that's really hard, right? Because a lot of the time that emotional growth and like getting help is hard. So, I don't know. I hope that, I'm not sure why. And maybe it just might be because there isn't like, there's not like a, not like a platform either, like a community, so to say, for men too. So maybe as the conversation normalizes more, and, you know, there are more men now because I've seen more in my, in as going on, like, through the culture and eating disorder and stuff, I've talked to more men. So, you know, I think it's just growing that awareness and, you know, giving the men that are a little bit more comfort to come out and say, hey, yeah, I'm a little bit messed up. I gotta get help or whatever it may be, you know?
Yeah, and I even think the number's probably higher, but is there a hesitation or maybe just not even getting diagnosed, maybe to get told it's something else. So I really appreciate that you're bringing awareness about it and writing your book and talking about it, because I think the more, you know, it's brought out into the open, maybe people will recognize, like, oh, I am struggling with something. But I also think there's confusion about, well, where do I go for help, right? I don't know if that was the case for you. Like, people don't know, do I go to my primary care doctor? Do I find a therapist? If so, like, where do I find one? Because, you know, I don't know. What steps did you take initially?
Every single one you can possibly think of, and even outside the box. Like, I did an intensive outpatient. I had dietitians and therapists that were specialized in eating disorders. I had therapists that weren't. I had doctors of psychology, a psychiatrist, like, you know, I did a lot of things in the eating disorder culture, but then I also did a lot of things that were out of the box. Like, you know, one time I went on a psilocybin ceremony and did that. Another time I I had like all these self-help modalities, like mindful self-compassion. I went on a retreat out there and learned a lot about the emotional aspect of the human body. And so like, and I was doing everything. Like I even went through a kind of an alcohol program, but just used it on the eating disorder without telling people, because I could connect with the guys a little bit closer. So like literally when I went to Overeaters Anonymous, like when I say I did everything, I literally tried every type of self-help, professional help. Like I wanted to learn everything that was out there, because sometimes things work, sometimes they didn't. Sometimes I was doing like two or three things at one time. And so for me, I think it was just like, it was a mix of everything. Like I learned a lot from all these different things at different times, and I incorporated it into my life and how it like sat with me and what I thought worked and what didn't work. And then I focused more time on the things that I did think worked. Like I was down a mindfulness path. I went to the UMass Medical School for Mindfulness. There's a Jon Kabat-Zinn program that they have there that's pretty esteemed. And because at first I thought this was like, if I just make my mind stronger, I'll beat this thing. That's what I thought at first. It's a mental thing. I thought like, if I can just make my mind stronger, I can, you know, I can overcome these urges to binge eat, and that's it. Game over. So I just kept doing all these different things. And then I would, you know, I was like a scientist on myself. I'd like, and I had a journal for 2 years where I'd like track binges, and I'd go back and see how I thought and what was leading up to it. And I'd write the new one. So like I was doing everything I possibly could think of to eliminate this thing. And then there were things I liked better, and I focused on them. And I think it was just like, it was everything. Everything showed me something and helped me and kept progressing. And that's the thing with eating, the eating disorder, because you are still eating and you're still like building that relationship with food while you're, you know, maybe in a place that you don't even want to be doing that. It wasn't a very linear thing. It was, you know, 4 steps forward, 10 back, 2 forward, 7 back, 10 forward. And so it went back and forth and back and forth. And I kind of just basically never gave up, just kept going. And eventually all the things just kept giving me more awareness and more ability to look at myself and grow here and grow there. And I got to a point where like, I don't feel affected by eating disorder at all today. Not even a little bit. You know what I mean? And yeah. Like, and I separate them, right? I separate them. The eating disorder, I just, because it's so complex, mental, physical, like it's not just the act of eating or not eating. It's not. There's so much more. And I have to have a relationship with food for the rest of my life. So I look at binge eating, right? The action of binge eating. I don't do it anymore. There's no more urges. When there were urges, I overcame them. So I don't do that anymore. And I hope that I will never do that again. But like eating and me still have a different relationship than most people. And I'm still always going to have to like be aware of that relationship for the rest of my life. And there's a lot of things that go into it. So, but ultimately I do feel free. Like that's the biggest thing. That thing is a monkey on your back 24 hours a day, period.
Well, thank you for sharing that too, because I know everybody's journey is so different and everybody's path to healing is so different too. And it sounds like you were really invested too. You know, I think a lot of people do have questions, and I've talked about it on here before, but, you know, and I think the biggest theme people talk about is it's not this linear, like it's not like a broken leg where you get a cast for 8 weeks and then it's done. It's like, it is messy, because it's not just, to your point, it's not just about food. It's not just about eating. It's underneath. That's why I called it behind the bite. It's like, what's behind eating, right? It's like so many other things, and it's personal to everybody. It's your own journey, your own path, your own relationship with food and what it means to you and why. And, you know, but yes, ultimately we do have to eat for the rest of our lives. It's our only source of, you know, fuel and keeping us alive. So that's where it gets complicated.
Yeah. And you're 100% right. Like it's just messy sometimes. Like you just can't quit. Like in those times when it gets messy backwards, you got to just, you know, and it's hard too, because it's defeating. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I woke up the next morning, like being like, oh my God, again, like every part of me was trying not for this, not like, and that was daily. It's defeating to wake up to that and then have to then go through it again to try to get the upper hand for that day. Mm-hmm. So like, I get it. But for me, I just, if you just like, you can't quit in those times, like you just got to keep going. And eventually I think after all the work starts to accumulate and build up it, you know, you start, like I saw a lot of things on the journey that like gave me a reflection of like, all right, this hard work that I'm doing is working, because if it wasn't, I wouldn't have been able to maybe make this decision different in the moment or something here. So like, it just takes time. It's not overnight. It takes time, hard work, hard, like tough work and time and consistency.
Well, how can people find your book and read this? And also, are you on social media? So are you open to people connecting with you?
Yeah. BiteLikeAMan.com is a website that houses all the links to the book. Like, so you can buy the book on Amazon and all these different platforms, but that's the one that like, you can find all the platforms, but you can definitely go to Amazon, and the book is called Weight Class. I am on Instagram, The Real Danny O'Connor. And I love when people connect with me. I mean, it's cool. Like, I just had this mother connect with me about, you know, her son. And so that's really why I did it, you know? So I appreciate that and the words. And, I forgot what's the last one. What's that? That's it. The book. Yep. I'm good. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. That's
the awesome. Book, the book is important. Go get it, read it. It's important. And if you like it, pass it to someone else. That was the biggest thing. Like, I just want to start a conversation and maybe, you know, shed light on a culture that might be a little bit voiceless right now. So that's what I was trying to do.
No, and I totally appreciate it. I was so happy to hear you wrote the book and reached out, and I'm glad you came back and glad you're doing well. And I think I was so glad to hear the one thing maybe people could relate to this is like something was bigger than your eating disorder, right? You're focused on being a great husband and father. And I think that's, when people ask like, what can motivate you to overcome your eating disorders? Like when something in your life has more value or purpose than that, it really makes a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, and that's monumental. Like, you know, my wife obviously is my best friend, my children, that's like a monumental thing. Like that was not going anywhere. Like every day it was in my face. So like, there's no way that I couldn't have, but not everybody has that. And right. You don't need that. Like, just, I call them like little footholds. Like, I've had so many motivations, you know, from Macklemore. I mean, he was a big one for like 6 months. Like, wherever you can find those little motivations, and it doesn't matter what they are, just use them as footholds to go be a little bit better. And then, you know, it'll switch and you'll get another motivation. Like, I got really lucky that I had a family to have my back. Not everyone has that type of support, but you can still find supports within you to help you along this journey. And I did that a lot, and I called them footholds. Like every time it was a new support or something that, you know, benefited my life. And so when you find those things, just stick with those until they wear off, and then find a new one.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We need more people to spread the word and to be open and willing to share their stories, especially men. So thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for being willing to let people DM you and message you. So thank you again, Danny, for being here.
Oh, no problem, Doc. I'm happy to be here anytime.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please like, rate, and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.